Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
You know, today we're tackling something, well, a really big misunderstanding, I think, in how people see a whole field. Most people hear computer science and they immediately think, okay, advanced coding, maybe setting up a network server, something technical like that.
And honestly, they couldn't be more wrong. That's really the mission for us in this deep dive. We want to show you that computer science is actually, well, it's a profound, really fundamental discipline. We're digging into Subrata Dasgupta's book, Computer Science, a very short introduction. And the goal is to get past seeing it as just a technical craft.
Right.
And frame it properly as this essential bridge. It connects mathematics, engineering, and even, you know, how we humans think. Exactly. It's the deep ideas underneath that drive all the technology we use. And that's why this book, short as it is, feels so important. So maybe let's start with the author, Subrata Dasgupta. He's not just Professor Emeritus of Computer Science at the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. He's also known for some really foundational histories of the field, like it began with Babbage.
Yeah, and his background is absolutely key to understanding his whole approach in this book. He's kind of a rare beast, you know, a triple threat, a proper computer scientist, but also a historian and a philosopher of science.
Okay, so that combination must give him a unique lens.
It really does. It means he deliberately steps back from the latest transient technology, you know, the trendy app or the newest operating system update. He ignores that stuff. Instead, he's laser focused on the timeless, the established principles, the big ideas.
So he's digging for the intellectual DNA, not just chasing the latest tech fashion. He's interested in those foundational breakthroughs from people like Turing and von Neumann, asking the big questions. What is computation? What is logic, fundamentally?
Precisely. He zeroes in on the what and the why of computation. And crucially, he places it within the much broader context of human intellectual achievement as a whole. He avoids getting bogged down in just the mechanics of the how.
Okay, so if computer science isn't really about the physical box sitting on your desk, then what is Dasgupta's central argument? What's the core idea of the field, according to him?
The core argument is that computer science is the study of, well, the phenomenon of the computational. That sounds a bit abstract, maybe.
A little, yeah.
But it means looking into the very nature, the power, and also the inherent limits of computation itself. It's an inquiry into the abstract process of handling information.
And he uses a concept from Herbert Simon, the Nobel laureate, to help define it. He calls CS a science of the artificial. That distinction sounds really important, doesn't it?
Oh, it fundamentally changes the conversation. Think about it. Natural sciences, like, say, biology or physics, they study what already is, the world we found, the world we inherited. Computer science, though, studies what can be. It deals with human-made phenomena, things like algorithms, software systems. But these things are still governed by rigorous logical laws.
Right.
And this perspective really elevates the discipline. It moves it away from just being seen as, you know, fancy trade school training and positions it as a formal study, a study of the fundamental rules that govern these complex systems that we create.
So computation becomes a tool for creating things, not just analyzing what's already out there. The book really does demystify the field, I found, by tracing back its intellectual roots. It shows that actually computational thinking goes way, way back, much further than the first silicon chip.
Absolutely. And to really get a grip on the field today, Dasgupta argues we need to understand two sort of monumental conceptual pillars. There's the abstract theory, and then there's the concrete architecture. Maybe we start with the theory, with Alan Turing.
Turing, okay. He was grappling with a really profound, almost philosophical question, wasn't he? Like, what are the absolute mathematical limits of thought or computation? And he realized that computation itself is an abstract process, problem-solving, information processing, and it's independent of any specific physical machine. To nail this down mathematically, he came up with the Turing machine.
The Turing machine is so central. It's purely theoretical, right? A minimalist model, just a thought experiment, really. You imagine this infinitely long tape and a little head that reads and writes symbols based on simple rules. It's definitely not a blueprint for your laptop.
No.
It's a rigorous mathematical definition used to pin down precisely what the word computable actually means.
And that leads directly to the really huge idea, the Church-Turing thesis. which, if I've got this right, basically states that any problem that you can solve with any kind of effective step-by-step procedure, basically, any algorithm you could possibly dream up can, in theory, be solved by that simple theoretical Turing machine.
That's it. And that establishes the universality of the whole concept of computation. It says, essentially, look, if an idea can be broken down into algorithmic steps, then it's computable, period.
Okay, wow. So Turing gave us the theoretical proof of what computation is, what's possible in principle. But then how did we get from that pure mathematical abstraction to, well, actual physical machines, machines that could actually do the work, execute that logic? Mm-hmm. That brings us to the second pillar, right? The more concrete one, the von Neumann architecture.
Exactly. John von Neumann was the genius who provided the practical blueprint, the architecture that is remarkably still the fundamental basis of pretty much every computer built today, from your phone to a supercomputer. He detailed four essential components. You need memory. You need an ALU, that's the arithmetic logic unit, the part that does the actual calculations. You need a control unit to fetch and execute instructions. And you need I/O devices for input and output.
But wait, the real game changer wasn't just listing the parts, was it? It was the stored program concept, right? That's the key innovation.
Absolutely spot on. Before von Neumann's idea took hold, machines were generally hardwired for very specific tasks, you know, like giant specialized calculators. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to do something different,
you had to physically change it.
Often, yeah. Mm-hmm. You might have to literally rewire parts of the machine. Von Neumann's absolutely brilliant insight was, what if we store the program instructions in the same memory as the data the program works on?
Okay. That sounds simple, but the implication is huge.
It's immense. It means that just by loading different instructions into memory, you could instantly repurpose the same physical machine for virtually any task. That single architectural decision, that flexibility, is what shifted computers from being dedicated single-purpose calculators to being the flexible, general-purpose, universal tools we have today.
Wow. So that dual inheritance, Turing's universal theory of what's possible and von Neumann's universal architecture for building it, that's basically the engine driving the entire digital world we live in.
That's a great way to put it. That's the core.
Okay, so we have the theory, we have the machine blueprint, but how does the physical machine actually do logic? How does it perform reasoning? That takes us back, I guess, to the abstract math that governs the concrete hardware.
Right down to the level of the bit. This is where George Boole comes in, way back in the 19th century. He developed what we now call Boolean algebra. It's incredibly simple at its core, built on just three basic operations, AND, or R, and NOT.
True, false, basically.
Exactly. And those logical operations translate directly into how digital circuits work on or off, one or zero. They form the absolute bedrock of all machine functionality. Everything builds up from there.
So Boole gave us the logic, and then Claude Shannon, he gave us a way to actually quantify information itself, didn't he?
Yes. Shannon's work in information theory was revolutionary. He defined information mathematically. Mm. And crucially, his definition wasn't based on the content or the meaning of the message. It was based on the reduction of uncertainty. It's all about probability. This rigorous approach established the bit, a binary digit, zero or one, as the fundamental quantifiable unit of information. Suddenly, you could treat communications, storage, everything related to information as a precise engineering problem.
So we've covered what's possible in theory and what's actually built in practice. But Dagupta seems just as interested in what's practical or maybe what isn't practical. This brings us to the limits, right? The idea of complexity theory.
Yes, this is a really fascinating and profoundly important area. This is where the question shifts. It's no longer just, can we solve this problem algorithmically? It becomes, can we solve this problem efficiently? Can we solve it in a reasonable amount of time? This leads us straight into the famous problem of PVSNP.
Okay, P versus NP. We hear that phrase thrown around. Let's make sure we nail down the definitions for, you know, for everyone listening. What does P stand for?
So P stands for polynomial time. Think of P problems as the easy ones, relatively speaking. These are problems where we have algorithms that can find the solution quickly. And crucially, the time needed to find the solution grows manageably polynomially as the size of the problem gets bigger.
Like sorting a list.
The sorting a list is a classic example, yes. Right. Or searching for a name in a sorted directory. These things are fast.
Okay, got it. So P is easy. What about NP?
NP stands for non-deterministic polynomial time. Now, here's the crucial distinction, and it's a bit subtle. For an NP problem, finding a solution from scratch might be incredibly difficult. It could potentially take, you know, billions of years for large instances, even with the fastest computers imaginable. However, if someone just hands you a potential solution, you can verify whether it's correct very quickly in polynomial time.
Ah, okay. Verification is easy, finding it is hard.
Exactly. The classic example always given is the traveling salesman problem. Finding the absolute shortest route that visits a whole list of cities and returns home, that's extremely hard as the number of cities grows.
Mm-hmm.
But if I give you a proposed route, you can calculate its total length very easily and check if it meets some criteria.
Right. Checking is fast, finding is slow. And the PVSMP question is basically asking if these two classes of problems are actually the same.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
Is every problem whose solution can be quickly verified, NP, also a problem that can be quickly solved? P, that's the million-dollar question. Literally, it's one of the Clay Mathematics Institute's Millennium Prize problems.
And the implications are massive, right? What if P does equal NP?
Oh, it would completely change the world as we know it. If P and P, then all those incredibly hard problems, think complex logistics, protein folding, breaking most modern cryptography, they would suddenly become easy to solve. It would be a revolution unlike any other.
But most scientists suspect that's not the case.
The overwhelming consensus, though it's unproven, is that P does not equal NP. And if that's true, it confirms that there are fundamental inherent limits to practical computation. Some problems are just intrinsically too complex for our current computers, or maybe any conceivable classical computer, to solve perfectly and efficiently. We have to rely on approximations or heuristics, or just accept that some things are beyond our reach for perfect solutions.
Understanding that complexity is definitely a core lesson. It really shifts how you think about what technology can and can't do. Let's pivot slightly and talk about some of the key themes Descoopta keeps coming back to, the big messages that kind of reshape your perspective on computer science. First one, computational thinking.
Yeah, this is a really big one for him and for the field generally. It's the idea that computer science isn't just about building machines. It provides a fundamental cognitive tool, a new way for humans to reason. It involves systematically breaking down complex problems into smaller, manageable steps, recognizing patterns, designing algorithms, systematic procedures to find solutions. And importantly, it's not just for programmers.
Right. I can see that. If you approach, say, planning a really complex project, or even just figuring out the most efficient way to run your errands, if you break it down logically, step by step, that's basically computational thinking in action, isn't it?
Exactly. It's a transferable skill.
Hmm.
A second major theme that comes through strongly is the power of abstraction.
Abstraction, meaning?
Meaning hiding complexity. It's the primary tool we use to manage the sheer complexity of these systems. Think about high-level programming languages. They hide all the incredibly intricate details of the underlying machine code. Or even the von Neumann architecture itself. It's an abstraction, a model that lets us think about computation without worrying about transistors and voltages.
So abstraction lets us focus on the problem at the right level without getting lost in the weeds.
Precisely. And finally, the book really hammers home the deep interdisciplinary nature of computer science.
It didn't just spring out of nowhere.
Not at all. While its roots are clearly in logic and mathematics, it deeply intersects with so many other fields. Psychology, especially cognitive science, how do we think, how do we solve problems, but also linguistics, biology, economics, even the humanities now with digital humanities. CS provides this kind of universal framework for understanding information, processes, and complex systems wherever you find them.
Descoopta really does have a knack for distilling these complex ideas into sharp, memorable phrases. Maybe we should share a few of the quotes or key ideas that really capture the essence of what he's saying.
Yeah, definitely. This first one is maybe the most famous, and it perfectly sums up the book's entire mission. Computer science is no more about computers than astronomy is about telescopes.
Oof. Yeah, that one really makes you stop and think, doesn't it? It forces you to look past the physical tool, the machine, the computer, which is exactly where, like we said, most people get stuck. It forces you to focus on the concepts, the framework behind the tool.
Exactly. And okay, here's another great one, particularly relevant to AI discussions. The question of whether computers can think is like the question of whether submarines can swim.
Huh. That's brilliant. It completely sidesteps the usual, often fruitless debate about whether AI is conscious or thinking like a human.
Right. It suggests we shouldn't judge machine intelligence by how well it mimics a human brain. Submarines don't swim like fish. They move effectively underwater using their own mechanisms. Computers compute or process information effectively using their own different but powerful mechanisms. It shifts the focus to function and capability, not imitation.
Okay, one more. This one highlights the core skill involved. Computer science is a science of abstractions, creating the right model for thinking about a problem.
And this really brings it back to that idea of design thinking, doesn't it? The enduring value isn't necessarily knowing how to code in Python versus Java this year. It's the fundamental ability to look at a complex situation, identify the core issues, build a useful abstract model of it, and then design a systematic way to tackle it. That's the skill.
A truly universal skill. Okay, so we've explored the theory, the history, the big ideas. How can someone listening take these deep, maybe somewhat theoretical insights and actually apply them? How does this change how you operate in the real world?
Well, let's start professionally. Understanding complexity theory, that PVSSMP stuff we talked about, that's actually a massive advantage for anyone in management or leadership.
How so?
Because you learn to appreciate why certain problems like, say, optimizing delivery routes for a huge fleet or scheduling complex projects with lots of dependencies are inherently incredibly hard. You realize you might never find the perfect optimal solution in a practical time frame. So instead of wasting endless resources chasing that impossible perfect answer, you make better strategic decisions. You might decide to use a heuristic, a good enough approach, or find clever approximations. It leads to much more realistic planning.
That makes a lot of sense. Saves time, saves money, avoids frustration. What about on a more personal or, say, civic level?
I think simply demystifying the technology is hugely valuable. If you understand even conceptually that AI isn't magic, that it's based on complex algorithms, statistics, and logic,
right,
then you're much better equipped to evaluate the constant stream of news and claims about AI's capabilities, about cybersecurity threats, about data privacy issues. It allows you, as a citizen, to participate more meaningfully in important policy debates around technology. You're less likely to be swayed by hype or fear-mongering.
That's crucial today, and I guess my favorite application is maybe the unexpected creative one.
Yeah, tell me.
We're seeing computational thinking pop up in fields you wouldn't normally associate it with. Digital humanities scholars analyzing texts algorithmically, computational biology modeling complex life processes, even generative art using algorithms.
Absolutely.
It proves that these core concepts, systematic design, algorithmic analysis, managing complexity through abstraction, they really are universal problem-solving tools. Mm. They can enhance creativity and discovery anywhere.
So when you boil it all down, what's the final most valuable takeaway from Descupta's perspective? For me, it's the recognition that computer science represents a truly fundamental shift in human knowledge. It's not just a technical skill set. It's a new mode of reasoning. Descupta argues, and I think convincingly, that computational thinking needs to be seen right alongside mathematical reasoning as essential intellectual literacy for living and working in the 21st century.
Yeah, I agree. And maybe what surprised me most reading this was how it reframes the whole narrative about the future. You know, the usual story is often about machines replacing humans, taking jobs.
Mm-hmm. The dystopian view.
Right. But Descupta's perspective suggests something different. The real power, the real future, lies not in machines replacing us, but in computers acting as incredibly powerful tools to extend and amplify our own human cognitive capabilities. The future is defined by that synergy, that collaboration between human intelligence and computational systems.
A much more empowering vision, I think, and a powerful thought to reflect on as we wrap up this deep dive.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.